Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The first degree.
These things are supposed to happen in movies, not in real life.
These extreme, rare things that you think could never happen to you or anyone you know really can, whether that's, you know, violent crime, crossing paths with a serial killer, like these things can happen. You know, this whole process has been me, you know, looking at what my assumptions were and having them be proven wrong. And, you know, even my assumptions kind of about human nature.
Hey guys, welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. My name is Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen, who is wearing an interesting pair of socks that look like tree bark, but also vaginas.
Wow, we're going straight there, aren't we?
I got to talk about what really comes to me.
I understand. What do you think they look like?
I think it looks like a damask pattern.
All right.
What do you think?
Ancient France,
you know what?
Damask?
It looked a little, yes, I'll go with that. I don't know. I just thought
it's a nice
really,
mustard and brown.
Mustardy brown
the
type of
thing. The palette is nice.
Beautiful. Very autumnal.
Mm-hmm. Jared would appreciate that because Jared's body is a autumnal color. Mm-hmm. But
it's almost like it has a snakeskin feel to it too, a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird thing.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing going on. Billy also keeps messing up his mic, so we'll see how this goes tonight.
It's on. Yep, we're good.
Basically incompetent, this guy.
Basically.
We're starting to record right now. It's maybe almost 10 p.m.
It's 9:30.
Way past my bedtime. So right. We'll see how I fare for the rest of the episode.
We're here to support you.
Thank you through this really difficult time.
Somebody had a very important meeting at a very important restaurant.
Yeah, guys, Craig's in LA is a weird spot. It's supposed to be like an LA hot spot for all the celebs.
Did you see any celebs there?
We were sitting next to Cindy Crawford.
That's a good one.
It was a good celeb sighting. And then Josh Flagg, who was Becca's realtor that is on Million Dollar Listing, was also next to us.
That's really funny.
But other than that, yeah, it's weird. They have tablecloths. It's dark and like kind of yucky vibes, but
yucky vibes.
Apparently it's the LA hotspot.
Shit. Well, crossing that off my list. I'm the hotspot queen.
Yeah. I don't want to go there again. Billy, what day is it today? It's the day before.
Yes. It's the day before Halloween.
Many people's favorite holiday.
Yes. So we, you know, it's typically considered mischief night. Which is not good, but I'm going to go with Happy Haunted Refrigerator Night.
Oh,
that was an interesting one. My favorite or not favorite one is National Text Your Ex Day.
I dare not.
I also dare not.
I dare not.
Okay, well, that's enough of that. So let's turn down the lights
and turn up your anxiety.
Because this could be you.
Today's episode confronts not only universally understood horrors of brutal violence, but also the mostly unseen implications that homicide elicits in the hearts of those left behind. From that childhood relationship with a best friend you thought would never end, to the moment you realize how far you have drifted apart, to differences, assumptions, the conflicts we never moved past, and the feelings revealed when people are taken from us without warning before we ever had a chance to say goodbye. Homicide, in a sense, epitomizes the concept of stolen time. And the thing about time is that we always think that we'll have more.
When you think about Hollywood, what comes to mind? Fame, money, the Sunset Strip, sex, drugs, rock and roll, nightclubs, or celebrities? Hollywood is all of those things. And we know because we live here. Right now, we're sitting a few blocks from the famous Hollywood Boulevard, right in the middle of it all. So what does this say about the people who flock here from all over the country to settle in the 30.7 square miles under the Hollywood sign? People are drawn here for unknown reasons.
The perceived glitz and glamour drew the 22-year-old Ashley Ellerin to Hollywood. And after she arrived, she made the most of her life here. She was confident. She dated celebrities. She was flown around the world. She curated a lifestyle that suited her and that she was not ashamed of.
Ashley Ellerin was born in the Bay Area, but was raised in New Jersey. And while she was growing up, her best friend was a girl named Carolyn Murnick.
I consider Ashley my first best friend. We met when we were 8 or 9 years old. So it was the fourth grade, and we lived in a pretty rural area of New Jersey. And we went to public school, and just sort of right away, we started spending all our time together. She and I just bonded, and we both lived in sort of woodsy areas, so we spent a lot of time in each other's houses, sort of like playing in the leaves. We had cheap point-and-shoot cameras. We used to like to take pictures of each other all the time. We also started taking piano lessons from the same teacher, and we used to, you know, have our lessons one after another and have duets that we played in the middle. And then we, you know, went to art classes. So I look back on that relationship as sort of everything kind of wholesome about childhood in the pre-internet age. And, you know, this was before guys and drugs and sex and the things that can kind of start to separate kids as you go on to make different decisions around those things. And her family moved to California, I believe, after our sophomore year of high school.
After high school, Ashley moved to LA and ended up living in a yellow bungalow less than a mile from where we sit right now.
Yeah, and in 2001, Ashley was going to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising with the goal of breaking into the fashion industry. She was a young student, and as you do in your young 20s, she was playing the field and dating. She had recently broke up with her boyfriend, who was an acting coach, and she began casually dating and had been connected to a number of celebrities, including Vin Diesel and Law & Order's Jeremy Sisto.
And Ashley visited Carolyn once after she moved to LA. And as what happens to many childhood friends, the two had grown apart since their grade school years.
Yeah, Ashley came to visit me when I was, you know, in the middle of college, and she stayed with me at my New York apartment. We went to have lunch with my mom because we had known each other's families for growing up. And so my mom was interested in seeing her too. And it was like the way she was talking in front of my mom, she was saying things like, you know, my mom was asking like, oh, are you're working and what are you studying? And Ashley was just kind of like not really interested in playing along and was saying things like, oh, I'm doing some modeling and I'm, you know, some guy who's has a t-shirt line, like flew us all to Cancun to like, you know, model these t-shirts. And she was telling some stories, but in a very self-assured way, but they were clearly like, from my perspective, not parent-friendly stories, but she really didn't seem to care. Really within our first afternoon together, she started saying, you know, actually I make a lot more money stripping, and you know, it's very easy. And you know, she was talking about experiences of working bachelor parties. I know that she was maybe escorting in Vegas. You know, she talked about, yeah, what the experience is like and how you sort of manipulate guys, and you know, how you need a pedicure and a manicure every week because it's, you know, you've got to keep up the fantasy. She did mention a few celebrity names. I think I was just stunned, and I was just sort of trying to keep up, and I remember just feeling like, this makes everything that I'm doing in my life seem completely irrelevant and stupid and like childish compared to what it seems like she's doing. But I remember feeling like, does she have it all figured out? Like, she seems to be kind of enjoying herself a lot more than I am. it was really kind of was like breaking my brain at the time, but I did not have the maturity to express exactly why.
So I'm going to do my best to articulate this in an insightful way. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with the life that Ashley was living. And Carolyn said so herself that back at this time, she didn't have the maturity to express why she was feeling the way she did about Ashley's lifestyle. And I think, to put it in the most basic terms, we do fear what we don't understand. And we're all different. And we're all doing our best. And our college years are the source of great confusion and misunderstanding. And Carolyn and Ashley were living starkly different lives at this point. And your 20s is also a time where you care what people think. You just came out of high school where you were still sheltered and still have share sort of the beliefs of your peers. And I think this is something you grow out of, the judgments of others and things like that. But remember, they're 22 years old. So her reaction isn't that surprising.
So the story is set in the early 2000s, February 21st, 2001, to be exact. And to help paint a picture, Outkast, Miss Jackson was number one on the charts. Saving Silverman, Head Over Heels, and Hannibal were in theaters. And February 21st started a great day for Ashley. Her dad was visiting from Los Altos, and he was helping his daughter with some painting and remodeling of her bungalow. The two spent the day together, and then she drove her dad to the airport later that night. And later on, she spoke twice to a guy she had plans with later on who she'd been casually dating. His name was Ashton, and this young man was not yet really known to the masses, but he did have this budding acting and modeling career ahead of him. His full name, Ashton Kutcher. Then Ashley's landlord came over to help her with some things, and his name was Mark. Ashley had been newly romantically involved with Mark, and he ended up coming over briefly for a little bit, then ended up leaving. Ashley called Ashton after Mark left and asked if she should meet him at a party where he was going to watch the Grammys. He told her no and that he'd end up meeting her at her place after to pick her up. So then Ashley started getting ready for Ashton to pick her up.
And at 10 p.m., Ashley's roommate Jennifer arrived at the bungalow. They had been living together just for about 6 weeks at this point. So Jennifer parked her car, walked up to the little house that she shared with her friend. But when she got to the door, she realized that she had left her keys at her boyfriend's house. But she hoped that Ashley was home, so she knocked on the door for 2 minutes to be let in. Ashley didn't answer, which was odd because her car was parked out front and the lights were on. But Jennifer didn't think much of it because Ashley was one to leave the lights on. Maybe somebody had picked her up, she thought to herself. So Jennifer eventually gave up and went back to her boyfriend's where she slept that night.
Right. And at around the same time, 10 p.m., Ashton called Ashley twice to let her know that he was on the way to pick her up. There was no answer. He figured it was either because he had bad reception in the Hollywood Hills, or maybe Ashley was in the shower, blow-drying her hair and couldn't hear her phone. A combination of all of these things. So he drove over to her place to get her anyway. He arrived at her house at around 10:45. Ashley's bungalow was lit up from the street with all the interior lights on. Her maroon BMW was in the driveway. It appeared from the outside that she was home, as Ashton was expecting her to be. He walked up to the door and knocked on it several times. He was starting to get the creeping suspicion that maybe Ashley was angry with him, that he didn't invite her to that Grammy party that she had called him about earlier. He knocked on the door again, and he knocked on the door again, but he was only met with more silence. So he looked into the front window. Inside, there was no sign of Ashley, but what he did notice was that red wine stains appeared to be on the floor in the hallway of the house. He didn't really think much of it and figured that she was trying to make a point. Maybe she had gone out with someone else. Maybe she was just blowing him off. So he gave up. He walked back to his car and he drove away.
And the next morning at around 9 a.m., Ashley's roommate Jennifer returned back to the bungalow and now she had her keys. She walked in the door and everything seemed pretty normal until something appears in her view that she cannot compute. Ashley was lying on the carpet in the stretch of the hallway between the living room and the bedrooms. And for a split second, Jennifer thought that Ashley might have been joking around. She was really funny and maybe would have pulled a prank like that. But when she approached, there's so much blood and it was so red that she first thought it was paint. But when she came close to Ashley's face, it was blue. The lifeless form in front of her was really Ashley, and Ashley was dead.
So Jennifer ran out of the house and called 911 from her car. When the police arrived, they entered the apartment and saw Ashley. She was wearing a turquoise robe. She was lying on her back in a pool of blood. The wounds to her neck were so severe, it seemed to the police that someone had tried to decapitate her. And there was a V-shaped wound around the back of her neck, too. She was pronounced dead at 9:28 a.m. And the police noted the position of Ashley's body. Her legs were slightly apart, one sort of twisted in a strange way. It didn't appear to be natural, and perhaps she'd been moved.
Right, and the scene itself was truly a thing of nightmares. L.A. Detective Tom Small, who was working out of the LAPD's Hollywood division, said of the scene, "There's a lot of anger, a lot of rage. Somebody had isolated Ashley Ellerin to kill her and was very, very angry when he did it. It was just a very bad scene, probably one of the worst I've seen. Blood spatter covered the walls and the ceiling. Blood soaked the rugs and pooled on the tile bathroom floor. Ashley had obvious defensive wounds. She attempted to fight off what appeared to be an incredibly frenzied attack."
And investigators could see that Ashley was getting ready for the night out when she was ambushed. Her blow dryer was on the toilet seat, her curling iron was plugged in, and it was still hot. The police shut the street down, her bungalow was taped off. Every shred of evidence was collected. A scene this bloody could suggest that either the attack was super personal or it showed a level of deviance possessed by whoever could have done this. And despite the fact that CSIs went through the scene with a fine-tooth comb, there was no physical evidence that was found that could be used to identify the killer.
Ashley's body was taken in for an autopsy as the LAPD mobilized an investigation. And all the while, the news of what had happened to Ashley was slowly spreading to her loved ones, one phone call at a time. The news reached her parents in Los Altos. And eventually the news reached the East Coast, where Ashley had grown up. And it blindsided friends from childhood and high school.
At that point, I was still living in my college apartment in New York. And I was going home to visit my parents for the weekend. And I think that maybe my mom picked me up at the train and then took me to the house. And my dad had already read the paper and said, "I have terrible news that I have, you know, Ashley's been murdered." And then we sat at the table and looked at the paper, and I felt, you know, I think immediately what I felt was numb.
Ashley's autopsy revealed that whomever attacked Ashley was frenzied, and that was an understatement. She'd been stabbed a staggering 47 times. She had a slice on her hand, as if she'd grabbed the blade in self-defense. She was stabbed in the stomach, the upper body, the back, and the back of the head, almost decapitated, as Billy said earlier. And most of her wounds would have been fatal on their own, because they were more than 6 inches deep, some of them.
Oh, gosh. And the medical examiner noted that the direction of the knife wounds seemed to be coming downward. The perpetrator had been on top of her and stabbed her while she was down. The sheriffs on the case described the killer as a, quote, modern-day Jack the Ripper. With 47 wounds, it was as if he wanted to inflict as many injuries as he could in the least amount of time.
So the detectives are just trying to make sense of this scene and trying to deduce what was the motive, what was going on here. Nothing was stolen from the bungalow, and there was a decent amount of cash that was left undisturbed. She was also wearing jewelry that the killer had no interest in. And Ashley's murder didn't seem to be motivated by rape or sexual assault. Under her robe, she was wearing a bra, pajama shorts, and a tank top. And none of these articles of clothing looked to be disturbed. The killer had incapacitated Ashley, but no rape or sexual assault was evident.
So the police also observed that the windows of the bungalow were not only locked, but had security bars on them, which is a common thing in Los Angeles, Hollywood specifically. The front door was locked, and it was behind a heavy metal screen door, also locked. There were no obvious signs of forced entry. Police dove into Ashley's life and learned that she was a sweet person who everyone seemed to love. She was also, though, in her early 20s, experimented and was testing life's boundaries. And as a gal who moved to Hollywood at 18, speaking for myself, it's a life I can relate to. You do a lot of weird stuff at that age when you're in this weird city. And it's not one to be ashamed of. It's not a phase to be ashamed of. It's a phase that's an implication of moving to LA at such a young and immature age and experiencing sensory overload, not really knowing yourself yet. Everyone who knew Ashley was interviewed. And this was difficult because she was popular. She was social. Her social network was wide and far-reaching. And she was in the prime of her life and had an active dating life, which is not easy for an investigation.
Right. And off the bat, there were a number of possibilities in terms of suspects. We've got Mark, the landlord, who was placed at the scene. We've got Ashton Kutcher, who was also placed at the scene. And we've got anyone else that she may have been romantically involved with. The murder of women is often prompted by a jilted lover or partner, so it's no surprise that the police were looking for a connection there.
This sounds like a lot of people, but in modern day dating, if you were murdered, any guy you were texting, and some women, I know when I'm in my crazy dating phases, it could be multiple people.
Oh my God, dozens.
Right. So it sounds worse than it is because there's no texting going on back then. But this is essentially the same thing as what is happening now.
Right. And she was also just a social person with a big social circle. So obviously the amount of people that she's in contact with on a daily basis is just larger than maybe a more secluded person.
Yeah. Cause when you think about it, it's easier to find people now because you can go, if you get somebody's phone, like, you see everybody that they're texting, everybody that they might've met on Tinder, everybody they might have on Facebook, if they're still using it, anybody that they've talked to on Instagram. But so it's easier now, but you also had so many more people now than you might have back then.
Right.
Because you had
more access.
So much access to people.
To people that you've not
You might not even
met.
Know and haven't even met yet. But everything is going to be a clue for that. So
right. So police are looking for connections. Who could be responsible? They're getting all their ducks in a row, trying to familiarize themselves with Ashley's routine, with people in her life. And her friend Carolyn back on the East Coast was feeling a range of emotions. And she was so removed from Ashley's life in LA that she was left to just speculate based on essentially the last time she spent with her. And it's when Ashley came to visit and she had these jarring revelations showed to her about what Ashley was doing. So her imagination about what had happened was running wild.
You know, of course, my mind went to what I last knew about her a year and a half ago, which was what that she told me that she was working as a stripper and also escorting and dating guys that were flying her, you know, around the world and different drugs that she was trying. And, you know, I rocketed back to those feelings of just sort of disillusionment and confusion and feeling like wondering if I, you know, felt concerned about her or was that judgy. But immediately when I saw the news in the paper, I assumed that this must be connected to her to sex work or to drugs. And that also I thought, do I tell my parents this? Like, do I tell my parents these, you know, secrets? And I think back to that time, I just kind of, it's colored by sort of the confusion of young adulthood, you know, overall in a way.
But the police, of course, are going to want to go to her circle of friends first and start with her romantic partners. And that includes Ashton Kutcher. And finding Ashton Kutcher was easy because the second he learned of what had happened to Ashley, he went to the police and he told them that his fingerprints would be on her door and on her window and possibly in other areas of the house. And he walked them through the reason why he was at her house that night, explaining that he hadn't picked up on anything being amiss, which is why he didn't call 911 that night. He explained further that Ashley's place was sort of in disarray because of the painting that she and her dad were doing on the day of the murder, which is why the red stains that he had seen didn't stand out to him. They raised no alerts.
And the police speak to Ashley's love interest and landlord named Mark. They learn that on the day of the murder, he had come over before Ashley had plans with Ashton. Mark told them that he and Ashley actually had sex that night. And then while he was getting ready to leave, Ashley asked him to stay and said that she didn't feel like going to the Grammy party with Ashton. But Mark had to leave because he was seeing somebody else too. Remember, this is a new thing between them. So the woman Mark was seeing was due to meet up with him soon. They say goodbye. He locked the door and then blew Ashley a kiss as he walked out.
When I was growing up, I took French in high school, but I could never get the language to stick. I wanted to be fluent so bad, but it never happened. I just couldn't focus and I couldn't practice enough and it didn't work. But thankfully, there's Rosetta Stone, which is the most trusted language learning program, and it's available on desktop or it can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone is different. It immerses you in so many ways. And with its intuitive process, you can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and then sentences. And before you know it, boom, conversations. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the First Degree listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/first. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/first today. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for all of your springtime goals. If you don't have time, Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. So you just get to eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, cleaning up. You really just heat and savor the good stuff without all of the stress. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Plus, you can pause and reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution to premium, fast meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I'm so busy, so it's amazing to just have Factor meals in the fridge for whenever I realize that I'm starving and I don't have any time to cook anything. They're amazing, they're healthy, and they keep you fueled all day long. Head to factormeals.com/degree50 and use code degree50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's degree50 at factormeals.com/degree50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't, and the RealReal makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the RealReal, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
Now, it's important to note that Mark actually lived in the same sort of area, complex, what have you, because bungalows in LA, for reference, they're like standalone little houses, but generally there are clusters of them. There'll be like six in a complex.
It's like a detached apartment complex.
Yeah. So they're standalone, but you know, sometimes they have a front gate or in a courtyard between all of them. So that's what this is here. So Mark lived in the same bungalow complex. And he told the police something really interesting, that an hour after he left Ashley's place, he glanced out the window and saw the exterior motion sensor light brighten up the courtyard in front of Ashley's house. He spotted a tall man with light hair walking towards Ashley's bungalow.
And the police believe that Ashley knew her killer, but who could it be? And unfortunately, the investigation was thwarted by the fact that there was no DNA of their suspect recovered on the scene. So they have two men who have been intimate with her, Ashton and Mark, both at the crime scene that night. And one of them, Mark, was actually intimate with her that night. So the scenarios that the cops could have been playing in their heads are Mark got jealous because she was potentially going out with Ashton that night, or Ashton caught Mark walking out of the apartment and then went in and did something.
Right. And Mark was seeing a woman. Maybe she got jealous and
it just turned into something bigger.
Yeah, there are a million things and it is kind of like a tangled web.
Yeah. And so they go through every person in her life and they check the timelines and check the alibis because that's the only thing they've got because they've got no physical evidence. But both of these men, both Mark and Ashton, are cooperating fully.
So at this point in the investigation, no leads are really panning out. But this one name keeps coming up as Ashley's loved ones are being questioned. His name is Mike. Mike, the furnace guy, but nobody knew his last name. All they knew was that Mike was around in the neighborhood. He said he worked on furnaces and he kept telling this story about being hit by a cement truck when developers were building the Kodak Theater in Hollywood and Highland, which is right down the street from Ashley's house. And he also said that this accident was going to make him really rich because he filed a lawsuit.
That's right. And on a hunch, Detective Small, Tom Small, who is working in this case from the Hollywood division, contacted the construction company that this guy was referring to in his story. And he also contacted the lawyers for Kodak, because if they were suing Kodak, I mean, there must be record of such a lawsuit. But there had been no such accident, and neither were being sued. And while no man or pedestrian had been hit in this intersection, what the police did uncover was an accident where a dog had been hit by a car in this intersection. That's interesting. So could this be a massive embellishment or a half-truth? And is this Mike guy connected to this accident with this dog? Well, he looked into it because a police report was filed as a result, and the dog owner was Michael Gargiulo.
So the cops look into Gargiulo, and they pull his DMV photo, and they show it to Ashley's friends. And they say, yes, that's Mike the furnace guy. But that's all they have. And Gargiulo seems to have no utilities listed under his name. And anyone who knew who he was, they didn't know where he lived.
And then, in what can only be described as a twist of fate, Detective Small with the LAPD got a call from a law enforcement agency from all the way across the country in Cook County, Illinois. On the line was a cold case detective. And this detective had been handed this murder of an 18-year-old Trisha Picascio, a crime that had occurred in 1993.
Now, Trisha's murder occurred prior to the real heavy days of using DNA. So in an effort to solve the case, the cold case detectives were collecting swabs of DNA from everyone who had been interviewed in Trisha's original case. And you see this a lot. You go down the list of the people who were suspects in the case. Now that, you know, once they discover that we can figure out DNA, go down, hey, can we swab you? They swab the cheek and then that's it.
Right. And in Trisha's case, they had taken swabs from under her fingernails. And luckily, it still boggles my mind that cops, before DNA was a thing, had the foresight to do this,
yeah,
thinking that they could utilize it later with technology. And this is one of those cases.
So they're looking at the list of everybody who was who were suspects back then. And who's on the list? Mike Gargiulo, Mike the furnace guy. So the cold case detectives from Cook County were calling the LAPD because they needed help tracking Mike down in order to collect DNA from him to test him. They wanted to swab him. So whether you want to call it serendipitous or not, it's truly an extraordinary coincidence that the Cook County cops called the LAPD for help in tracking down the same individual that the LAPD was actually looking for at the same time and looking for to pin on Ashley's murder.
It's crazy.
That is bonkers.
The odds of that are just like astronomical. I read an article that talked about the moment Tom Small got this call and he looked at a colleague of his and his jaw dropped. He knew this was their guy. He knew in his gut. But Mike was hard to track down. And it wouldn't be so easy for the LAPD because they, again, didn't have DNA in Ashley's case. But they did try to gather as much information about them as they could. And they tried to assist the Cook County Police in tracking him down so that they could subsequently test the DNA.
Well, in gathering information about him, the police learn how Ashley and Mike met. It was in the fall of 2001. Ashley and a male friend were standing outside Ashley's bungalow near the male friend's car. They had a flat tire. Then a seemingly nice, good-looking guy offered to help them with the flat. During the small talk that was exchanged, the 25-year-old Mike Gargiulo told them that he was a professional boxer, but had to quit after being electrocuted while fixing an air conditioning unit. At this point, Mike was 25 and already fixing AC units. He gave Ashley his info in case she ever needed anything fixed. Sometime later, Ashley's boiler broke and needed fixing, so they decided to call him. And how much time later is not, that information is not readily available.
Her friend Chris was coming over to pick her up at the house and had parked outside. And then when they came out, he had a flat tire on his car. And then suddenly this guy appeared and said he could help change the tire. And they saw, and he was, you know, they thought he was good looking or funny. And, you know, wasn't this funny that this guy was going to help him change a tire? And then they chatted with him and he gave them his card, heating and air conditioning. And then a couple days later, her boiler broke and they decided to call him. Originally, when I heard those facts, I thought this was totally random and you know, this all could have been avoided if Chris had taken care of his tires better. You know, I sort of like, that sounds absurd now, but I thought, was it that random that he just happened to enter her life by chance and because of a tire? But Chris told me later when he took his tire in to be repaired, they told him it had been slashed. And that I started to learn that actually he was a like real deal psychopath, stalker, killer that had been perhaps, you know, surveying her for weeks and maybe months, and he created that entire choreographed scene to enter her life. He had already chosen her as a target. He had already monitored her comings and goings. He slashed the tire. He probably broke the boiler knowing that she would call him. Like this, she had been targeted and trapped for a long time before her death.
Oh my God. So this is huge information and terrifying information. And when the police hear this, this tells them that not only has this guy killed before, but he will kill again. Somebody this deliberate, somebody who's willing to choreograph really a scene to insert himself into someone's life. This is a dangerous, dangerous predator.
Yeah. And a double insertion too. First doing the car and then knowing like, oh, I can jump in and help right then. And then he gives the card. So he knows the steps. So he's got the card. Then he breaks in, you know, allegedly. But this sounds.
Oh, I'm sure.
What are the odds that a couple of days later her boiler breaks? How often does a boiler break?
Well, it's really scary because he's pretty much like playing God in this situation, and he finds his prey, and he's like creating this whole storyline almost for himself, where he's controlling everything.
What's scary is that he's really good at it.
Yeah.
And probably acted very organically and sweet. And I'm a good looking safe guy. I live down the street. Good at it.
Oof. So at the time that Ashley had met Mike, she was living with a male roommate and all of them were around the same age as Mike was. So Mike started coming around and everybody was kind of friendly with each other. They started doing neighborly favors for one another. And apparently Mike even had his friend that was a doctor write a prescription for Ashley's carpal tunnel syndrome. So he was just doing nice, normal favors.
Right.
And Ashley didn't really think much about him. She was friendly back to him. And some of Ashley's friends, however, thought that he gave off pretty creepy vibes.
And guys can be a little bit more perceptive than girls sometimes.
Yeah.
Either girls are so perceptive that where they think innocent guys are creepy.
Or we're kind of oblivious and are like, eh,
oblivious
whatever.
And guy friends will be like, dude, do you not see this?
Yeah.
But then Mike really started getting weird. He started parking in front of their house, and he was even confronted by her roommate about it. And his excuse for parking there was that he was, quote, laying low because the police and FBI kept showing up. And why were they showing up? Because they wrongfully suspected him of being tied to a murder in Chicago. And then he shows his ankle, and he has a hunting knife strapped to his ankle and shows it to them. And this is when Ashley and her roommate start to distance themselves from him. They sort of back away slowly and cautiously.
But I will say it is more the roommate. Ashley's still kind of like, whatever, like they're best friends. She's listening to her best friend, but she doesn't necessarily feel scared by him. And the idea is here is like, this is a fantasy. No one really believes this, where he's, you know, trying to sound cool, maybe. Yeah. I don't think anyone's paying him that much mind. I mean, Ashley was dating celebrities and had a lot more going on than this repairman down the street.
Yeah.
So I think it was like, all right, dude, bye. You know, whatever. So the police are learning these things and they're becoming more and more convinced that Mike Gargiulo is involved in Ashley's case and believe they would have evidence to arrest him soon. They're even more baffled to learn that he would freely use this excuse about being suspected of another murder. That's something they had never heard before because they believed him to be connected to this murder because they were in cahoots with the Cook County police. But they really did believe they would arrest him soon. And I was reading papers. I went back to the articles from that week and there's way fewer than you would expect, to be honest. And one of the final articles of the week it happened was an arrest is imminent, because I believe by then they knew his name and they were like, oh man, this is our guy. But unfortunately, that would not be the case.
And in the years that ended up following Ashley's murder, the identity of her killer remained elusive to the public. And it's understandable that those who had loved her were aching for these answers. And it's at this time that Carolyn became compelled to write a book about her friendship with Ashley and her quest for answers in her case.
Carolyn had become a journalist and was writing for New York Magazine when she started working on this project. It was a book that she'd eventually call The Hot One, about her friendship with Ashley and her quest for answers in this case.
People's paths in life are it's all very complicated and interconnected. And the fact is, I do believe that we have no idea how Ashley's life would have turned out. And the life that she was living at the time of her death, I think, most likely would have transitioned into something else. So I want to make it clear that I don't think, you know, oh, she was a sex worker and doing drugs and therefore she met, you know, a violent killer and that's just how it goes. That's not how it goes. I think that it's a lot more subtle. And I think one of the big reasons I wanted to explore in my book and what I want to keep talking about is how so many of the stories that we hear about crime, we only get a stereotypical or kind of one-dimensional portrayal of the victim. And what I wanted to show is how nuanced and complicated it all is, and that Ashley had a lot of people in her life that knew very different sides of her. And the fact is, yes, at the end of her life, she was doing drugs and was supposed to be going on a date with Ashton Kutcher, but she was also someone that's remembered in childhood as playing piano duets and hiking and painting and had, you know, was very well educated and from a good family. And who knows what would have happened 6 months later if she hadn't died. And I think what I was really hoping for with my book is to kind of show how complicated the sort of steps are that can make up someone's identity. And the fact is, a murder just sort of cuts it off at a fixed point, but that's not, you know, all she was, and it's not, and the saddest thing is there's no telling what she could have been.
Unfortunately, more happened during this time that Mike remained free. More women died.
My family's been waiting for justice for Trisha's murder for 17 years.
With what we know today, Michael Gargiulo may be a serial killer.
We've had the hardest time figuring out why this is happening the way it's happening, why they haven't pursued this. To me, in being on the inside, it seems somewhat political. I think that they would maybe have to admit that some mistakes were made. It's easier to ignore something that isn't close to them than to actually do the right thing.
Trisha greatly resembled the other victims here in California.
And the reason why Mike was not apprehended is tragic, incomprehensible, and truly unforgivable. So the murder of Ashley Ellerin is horrific. It is inconceivable for those who love her.
But unfortunately, this case gets so much worse. And the amount of pain and loss of life that spiderwebs off of Mike Gargiulo is not, it's too long for one episode. So we're going to cover the rest of his crimes in part two of the story. And we will have Carolyn Murnick with us for that episode as well. And we briefly referenced that the reasons that Mike Gargiulo remained free were unforgivable. And we'll elaborate on that just a tad. The political powers that be in this case made some very egregious decisions and essentially gave Mike years more out on the streets to destroy other lives. And that's exactly what he did.
All right. Until next week, if you guys have a story to tell, please write us. Hello at thefirstdegreepodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram at thefirstdegree, at Alexis Linkletter, at Billy Jensen, at Jack Vanek. Join our secret, super secret Facebook group. Just search The First Degree in the search bar. We're talking all things true crime all the time. And we are still running our contest on Instagram. Give us a 5-star review, write us some funny things, and we will pick a winner every week to get some First Degree merch. And if you want to stick around, we are going to kill some time and talk about our ideal adult Halloweens.
So until next week, remember, only you can prevent serial killers. And keep your friends close.
But not that close.
Happy Haunted Refrigerator Day.
Don't text your ex.
Or do. And show us what the text was.
Have a spooky Halloween tryst with your ex.
Sources for today's episode include Carolyn's book, The Hot One, court documents, 48 Hours, The LA Times, LA Weekly, CBS Chicago, but as always, our First Degree interview is always our biggest source.
Finding the music you love shouldn't be hard. That's why Pandora makes it easy to explore all your favorites and discover new artists and genres you'll love. Enjoy a personalized listening experience simply by selecting any song or album. And we'll make a station crafted just for you. Best of all, you can listen for free. Download Pandora on the Apple App Store or Google Play and start hearing the soundtrack to your life.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, welcome to
the killing time.
Fuck you. When are you gonna stop it?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's Halloween candy edition.
I just love you're such a good. I mean, I love you so much, but I never get an opportunity to provoke you ever, and this is the only time.
You have lots of opportunities to provoke me. I just don't think many things provoke me.
That's the thing. That's right. Except for this. This somehow you're pushing back on.
You
just doesn't feel right.
I'm getting back at you for telling me I didn't write bitches in the bathroom. Because I was like, you're fucking with me, right? Like,
no,
you are.
In my memory, to me, you were not there.
That's insane. I'm literally, you think I'd ever be there? You'd be with my boyfriend without me? Like, that's what's crazy about it.
Maybe. No. He lived with us.
Yes, but when I was there.
I don't know.
That's crazy. And it takes a long time to write a song. I was there.
But I did write this song while I was taking a sound class for college. So I was kind of doing it for a class-ish, but not really.
I was also in piano at that time.
Okay. Oh my God, shut right. up.
I am a pianist.
No, you're not.
All right.
Yes, I am.
Play a fucking song right
I don't
now.
Have a piano right now.
You're such a liar.
Why would I lie to you?
You're not a pianist.
Okay, no, but I know how to play the piano.
You do?
Sure.
How well?
Pretty well.
What
and
songs
the flute,
can you play?
And the saxophone, and the piccolo.
All
this
right,
is
well,
my truth.
This is the Halloween candy edition of Killing Time, comma,
I'm a one-woman band.
Get out of here. Get out.
Am I fired?
Yeah. Oh my God. Imagine if Alexis got fired from the podcast. Billy, what would we do?
I don't know.
Quit the podcast. It would be done.
I think we would it would just be pretty much like this is right now.
Yeah. But it'd probably do better than how it is now. But like, at least we cut the fat, the person with no followers. Who can't promote it.
Who does everything.
That's what, you know, that's,
I'm the brains of the operation.
I'm the beauty.
And I'm the brawn.
I'm the beauty too.
But in that conversation, you're the brains
and beauty.
He's the brawn,
and you're the bark,
and I'm the beauty.
No, and you're the bark.
You're the bark.
What the fuck is the bark?
Fucking bark.
What is bark?
Like you've the fucking pull.
Oh, I have. Oh, like emotional bark.
Yeah.
I was thinking about bark on a tree.
No, I like a bark.
Oh, I've got the bark.
Yeah.
I'll be the bark.
I'm beauty and brains. I'm glad we sorted that out.
Yeah. So
I don't agree with
you're
that.
You're beauty and bark. I'm beauty and brains. And you're
Billy's giving up on his question.
He's got height. Done. He's got height.
I've got, Billy's, and I'm the tall guy.
Yeah. Billy yeah, can see over all the peons.
Yeah.
Right.
What was your question? Peon?
That's a good word.
Yeah. I don't know if we had that conversation yet, though.
I don't
either. That's the next one. That's next week.
God damn it. Okay. Billy, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about our favorite Halloween candy, and I'm also going to give you some Halloween candy myths. And also, you know, people always talk about when you are going, you know, trick-or-treating, I could never eat the candy while we were out trick-or-treating. You had to bring it back. And my mom used to have to go through every piece of candy to make sure that there was nothing weird in them. Did your mom do that?
Not that I remember.
Yeah.
My mom doesn't love me, so no.
Okay.
So my mom loves me, but I don't, maybe she did. I have my memory of my childhood is so fuzzy. Very fuzzy.
No, my mom loved me. I think she was just like, eat whatever candy you fucking want.
Yeah. So they always say that. So now here are the instances of that going on there. So the only known case of poison candy was when Ronald Clark O'Brien took out a life insurance policy against his daughter and son. And in 1974, he was actually sentenced to death for poisoning his son's Halloween candy with cyanide. And he would become known by fellow prisoners before his death as the Candyman.
The Candyman.
Yes. Reminds me of the Aqua song. Oh, my love, I know you are my Candyman, and oh, my love.
Okay. I did not know that Aqua had another song other than Barbie Girl.
Oh, they have many.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
I'll play it for
you guys.
That
guy was also...
Oh, is that true?
I think so.
We can't tell you what Jacqueline just said, but it was not good.
If you want to look up Aqua... No. That was Ace of Base.
Okay, so Aqua's fine.
Yeah, Jesus.
Ace of
we
Base...
We didn't say what it was.
Ace of Base has a sketchy past.
Yeah. That does not surprise me.
Anyways, okay, so...
But in 2000...
That's the only... That's
well,
the only
in 2000,
case?
James Joseph, as far as poisoning goes, James Joseph Smith of Minneapolis was giving out candy bars in which he had hid needles. One boy who ate the candy was pricked by the needle, but no medical attention was necessary. And police charged Smith with one count of adulterating a substance with intent to cause death, harm, or illness. And these are facts that I got from truecrimedaily.com, but I actually did this infographic, so I wrote it at the point from me. I'm sourcing it, but I was working for somebody else at the time. So
this is facts that I'm pulling from Billy Jensen's brain.
Yeah. But what is your favorite Halloween candy?
Oh, that's like a specific Halloween-y candy. I like a chocolate.
Like, what do you like? What would you be excited about when you were trick or treated and you got something?
I'm just like a Snickers gal.
I don't like candy.
I only like chocolates. It's like a Snickers or a Twix or Milky Way.
Twix, really? Kit. When I was younger, Kit Kat was my favorite because I love to bite them and like peel the layers apart.
You know what? Okay, so for Twix, this is so gross. No. It's not that gross, but I used to get Twix and then I used to get pretzels and then I would scoop all of the chocolate and caramel up and then eat that and then eat the little wafer separately.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's not
as gross as I thought it was in my mind.
No. I mean, I used to do that with Hostess cupcakes. Just take off the, you know, you eat
Hostess cupcakes.
Eat the top of the cupcake first.
For you're a boomer.
Yeah.
God, those are,
I'm not a boomer. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm not a boomer. Jesus.
Gen X isn't real. It's just boomers.
Boomers are like.
It's young boomers.
No, you're a young boomer where it's like all the food has preservatives in it.
Yeah. You only ate Twinkies.
That's you eat Lunchables. You eat McDonald's. You are the quintessential boomer.
That's not a boomer.
You eat Twinkies and.
My dad was a boomer. My mom was a boomer. The boomers were after everybody got back from the war. Everybody just had tons of sex and had tons of kids. That's what the boomers were.
And would they feed those kids? Hostess cupcakes.
And then those
and
kids
TV dinners.
Then those people had kids and then we came out. and that's us. Gen we're X. Gen X.
But no, you're the, you're the kids
created,
of the boomer.
We created grunge.
What's
that's right.
What's the,
and
the
that you ride the flip
grunge
phone.
Coattail as long as you can.
What was the what's the generation above Gen X? Boomers? Or is there one in the middle?
No, it went boomers, Gen X.
So my parents are boomers.
Your parents are boomers, yeah.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah, because your parents are older.
Yeah, but they're cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not judging me. So
what's your favorite Halloween candy, Billy?
Reese's.
Oh, I forgot about Reese's.
Go with the Reese's. Yeah.
Reese's.
I thought it was Reese's.
Reese's.
Reese's. Reese's. Reese's monkey.
What?
Reese's monkeys.
What's that?
I don't know. It's a type of monkey. But yeah, no. Reese's, that's the perfect candy bar. Actually,
minis.
I don't like the minis because
why?
The ratio.
Too much chocolate?
No, the ratio is bad. Yeah.
See,
I actually think, sorry, the pumpkins or the Christmas tree ones are the best ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
There's a lot, the ratio, there's a lot more peanut butter to chocolate in those, and those are perfection.
See, I don't like when you get into the middle of like a Reese's, the actual cup, and then it's mostly peanut butter and barely any chocolate. Mm. That's where I feel like the ratio has gone wrong.
I don't like Reese's.
Why? You like peanut butter and chocolate?
I don't really like any of that stuff anymore. I like
I don't love it. I don't like it's
too
not like,
sweet. I like a dark chocolate.
Yeah, but like if you're gonna have a candy and you had to have like a typical Halloweeny candy.
Oreo McFlurry.
So Oreo. Oreo McFlurry is a drink from McDonald's.
I know. But like that's the only really sweet thing I would eat. Like I don't really like candy. I hate to be like put the kibosh on this fun.
Wow.
I want a cheese plate.
Okay. So
this is not a cheese plate conversation.
I'm sorry.
No. So ideally in your
orbit
world on Halloween, you would go trick or treating and they would give out cheese. Toothbrushes.
Oh my God,
and cheese.
Little blocks of cheese. Could you imagine?
I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
Each place.
Or like a little lag of salami.
Mm-hmm.
Some
and then
dried
the,
meat.
A little mini bottle of alcohol.
Yes.
The dried cured meats. Yeah. And little minis.
Yes, a dried meat and alcohol, and maybe like a little packet of medication, like
like Xanax. Oh,
but it's like I'll be hungover. Little bottles of wine.
You know what? We need to come up with some kind of an adult trick or treating situation.
It's a great idea.
It's such a great idea where you do get fun mini things like that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, they call adult Halloween in some neighborhoods where like the parents will like give you a beer or something if you're out with your kids, but
no, I need an adult childless Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Where you go to every house that you go to, it's going to be something different like that. Like you get the little mini bottles from the airplane.
You get like $100 out of debt.
Get like a thong from Victoria's Secret.
What else do we need as an adult? You get a free oil change.
You know what I always need? A roll of quarters for my laundry.
Yeah. No, or you could just,
get a laundry my own unit, Jack. It's on my to-do list.
Or you can, or you give them your laundry and then they actually do your laundry for you.
A fluff and fold.
Yes.
Yes. I like
free
this
oil
idea.
Change?
That's what I'm saying. Like a gift certificate to Valvoline.
Facial pore extractions.
Oh, you just go and just get a few extractions.
Yes.
And then the next place.
Diva cup.
Yeah.
Billy needs a
pap smear.
Billy needs a diva cup.
Billy, do you know what a diva cup is?
What is a diva cup?
Do you need a pap
guess.
Do you need a pap smear?
No, guess what a diva cup is.
What is a diva cup?
Was this a question at the Lady Gang live show?
Yes. It was.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is a diva cup?
I imagine it's a cup that catches menses.
Ew.
Don't call it menses.
Oh my God.
Menses.
I was using the correct terminology.
What is menses?
Like menstrual period blood.
Just call it menstrual blood.
Okay.
Just call it period blood.
Or menses.
Menses sounds sick.
Sick. I've never had a more disgusted reaction to anything in my
menses
life.
Menses is now my new least favorite word. That's sick.
I want to die.
And by the way, that's the question for next week.
I want to die.
I want to barf.
Billy?
Yeah.
Billy's favorite word is menses.
No, it's not.
I just want to sign
that
off
is
with
not,
this.
It is your favorite
that
word.
That is not
Billy
the case.
Menses Jensen.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was almost going to say Vanek.
Well, you guys are. Are you,
well, my
Billy
dad,
Menses Vanek.
My dad's name is Bill, so it makes more sense.
Right. That's, Billy Menses Vanek's good. Billy Menses Linkletter is disgusting.
Somebody out there's last name is Menses. There is somebody out there whose last name is Menzies. Look it up. There's somebody out there whose last name is everything.
I wish my last name was Cock.
Oh my God.
My name is Alexis Cock. It's so fucking commanding. Everyone pays attention to you.
That's so...
I'm going to change it.
Cock.
I'm going to put it on my Instagram.
Alexis Cock. Cock.
Maybe right. Cock like hyphen link letter.
Alexis Cock link letter.
Yeah. Right.
That's so weird.
It's good.
Cock.
Can't wait to see the logo.
Cocky link letter.
And then your TV show is going to be called She's Cocky.
Oh my God, so good. Stand by. Okay. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for that. All right. Well, this started out as a lovely episode talking about the joys and poisoning Halloween candy and ended on that.
That's showbiz, though, baby. It's unruly. It takes us where we're not sure we're going, and it reams us when we're down.
And it spits us out.
And then we're miserable after, and that's what's going to happen.
And that is fucking showbiz.
That's showbiz, baby.
That razzle dazzle. Thanks for the killing time joining us.
Signing off, Billy Menzies.
Billy Menzies Jensen, Alexis Cock Linkletter, and Jacqueline.
Give me a name, give me a name, give me a name.
Jacqueline Moist Vanek.
Oh, sick.
You're most welcome.
Bye.
Bye-yous. Say bye.
Oh, goodbye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.